Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Gestalten, the automotive design podcast where we like to discuss current things happening within the automotive design industry. My name is Eric Galina, and I'm joined by my colleague, Martin Groschwald. Hello, Martin. How are you today?
I am all right, Eric. As always, thank you for having the time that we can do this.
And, it's a pleasure.
Unfortunately, we were both not in Geneva this week.
Yeah, so that means we have a lot of time, actually.
Well, yes and no, because you still have some stuff to do, of course, from a working perspective. But you're sitting here in London. I'm sitting in Munich. And, you know, we would have loved to actually record this in Geneva as we usually do.
Yes, yes, most definitely.
But, you know, things happen, unfortunately, I'd say.
Indeed, indeed. And it is a shame. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's one of my favorite shows, certainly, of the year. Geneva is compact. It's neutral territory. A lot of really cool concept cars. All of the supercar manufacturers tend to show there, bring out new concepts, a lot of newcomers as well. So it's just a really great melting pot to see what's happening within the automotive design industry. And it's a real shame that we were not able to attend this year. But hey, you know, on the bright side, we were potentially saved from a huge, a virus, basically. The coronavirus is hitting the automotive industry in huge, you know, it's really having a huge impact. In China, you know, everyone knows how things have basically just shut down for the last few months. People are slowly now beginning to return to work, and things are basically now hitting Europe. So, you know, places in Italy, for example, very hard hit. Places, even, you know, here in the UK, there's a lot of worry, a lot of, you know, people being stocking up on goods. if you go to any supermarket, you'll notice the canned goods are pretty much depleted. Everything's out of stock. Anyway, it's I'm laughing, but it's quite serious. I think, you know, we've not seen something like this happen. Your view, I think, is different, perhaps because Germany hasn't really been hit that hard, or maybe you guys are just more take it as it comes type thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll take it as it is right now. Who am I to judge based on all these decisions? It is, of course, a shame, but you know, we'll have to accept the decision because it's not a decision made by the organizers and you know, the people running the show in Geneva. This was actually done and, you know, decided by the Swiss government. So there's very little we can do, you know, going against the Swiss government.
Indeed.
But, you know, let's take it as it is and actually, you know, go ahead. And for our listeners, obviously you guys, you know, if you're new to this, but even if you know our podcast for quite some time, we have a little bit of we've changed a few things up a little bit here because Geneva was more packed than usual, I would say. I mean, there's so many cars that have been presented either a little bit before the show, it would have been at the time then there was supposed the show to happen, and of course a little bit after this as well, after the usual press days. So what we have decided to do in this time is we're going to have a part one, which will be solely basing and focusing on the production cars that were presented in Geneva, and there will be a separate recording, which will be part two, which will be the concept car. So it will be a little bit easier for you to choose what you want to listen to, if you're more interested in production cars or concept cars and our opinions about that. And as we like to talk, we thought it's a little bit easier to kind of split that up and make this in a more adjustable chunks rather than having a two and a half hour podcast, talking about all these things. So this is part one, solely focusing on the production cars. And in no specific order. So we've just made a list of stuff that, you know, we wanted to talk about. No order in terms of, you know, greatest or worst and all these kind of things. And we're just going to continue talking about them. And the first one that we're going to start off with is the Koenigsegg Jamera, which we know, you know, has a Swedish origin in terms of why the name is called Jamera. But it's also the very first car where Sascha Silipanov, former, you know, head of exterior design at Bugatti, former advanced design chief at Genesis, responsible for the Chiron, as well as for the Genesis Essentia and Mint has gotten his hands on. And let's put it that way. For a first, you know, I don't want to say try, but a first, you know, touch on the Koenigsegg with some kind of directions on it, this has turned out very, very nicely, I have to say. I do appreciate that car very much. obviously, this is probably a car that they have worked on already before Sascha came in, but you can certainly see some clues that both him as well as, Etienne Salomé, who did the interior on this one, both have worked at Bugatti together. You can see that, this is clearly does have touches of both of their work and that are very, very visible.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it is a brilliant concept, from a variety of different perspectives. I know Sascha, so I got on the phone with him and had a good chat about the car. I'm going to be doing something more in depth with him later, but it is very, very interesting what it is that they managed to achieve in a super, super, super short time frame. This project isn't, it was a consideration for Koenigsegg, for a long time. You know, Christian's been thinking about this car for a while, but he never pieced it together. And now, the advent of, this, you know, miniaturization of technology, as it were, we're now seeing it come to fruition. So yes, Sascha, obviously a head of design over there, came in and dressed the car, as it were. I love just when you look at it from different angles. Obviously, there's a lot. The stance on that car is spectacular. But again, this is a super hyper sports GT, right? They're calling it a mega GT. But what's really interesting is the interior and the layout and the package, right? That to me is really what's revolutionary, on top of the fact that they've got this camless three cylinder that's putting out, along with the three electric engines, 1700 bhp, which is a ludicrous amount of power. But I think it's what's interesting about it also is, like, I don't know what it's going to cost. I don't know any of those details. However, it is coming to production. It is going to be built. It's going to be crash tested. Everything is going by the book on this car, even though there's probably going to be, not that many examples. I think it's like 300 examples that they're planning to sell. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. I think from a design perspective, we're looking, and a social perspective as well, we're seeing people, with more money that want something more exclusive, that want something with this is a theme, incidentally, that we're going to revisit multiple times over the course of this podcast, that want something, individual, that has an incredible amount of performance, but don't want to sacrifice necessarily in terms of space and room and all of that. So this thing is, it's close to 5 meters long. It's not a small car. The footprint is considerably large, but at the same time, when you think about the power and everything that's delivered, through this, and the fact that you can, bespoke tailor the interior and all the rest in terms of colorways and things of that nature, the lightweightness of it all paired with electric propulsion. And it's really quite an ecologically friendly proposition, as well, when you start thinking about how, that three cylinder power plant works. I mean, just they're getting like 600 bhp out of a three cylinder power plant. That is ludicrous. But anyway, we don't really talk about engines all that much. What we do talk about is design. In this instance, I feel that they are directly related because of the fact that this package enabled this kind of fluid form to be draped over this package. There were certain subtleties within the door, for example. It's quite sensual still. It's not like brutal. The headlamps are quite small, but also vital in terms of cooling and getting air to where it needs to be. And another thing that's really admirable about this is the fact that everything was done in-house. They don't have a supplier doing the headlamps. They don't, everything was built in this Swedish factory. And that, to me, is just monumentally impressive.
Yeah, I think, first of all, what I enjoy about this is that it's not an SUV.
Yes, quite.
You know, it's a four-seater, and this would have been great because they say, like, you know, apparently 4 2-meter large or tall individuals can easily sit in this. And I'm personally tall, and I would have loved to try this out. I would have just like, okay, is this just what you're talking about, or is this actually true? So that's the first thing for me as well. And it does come also with a certain subtleness to it. It's not this kind of in-your-face, ultra-aggressive kind of style. It is considerably still a Koenigsegg. I mean, you know, if you put the cars next to each other, it's certainly still a Koenigsegg. But it does have a certain appeal to the wider family and not just to the crazy car nut who, you know, wants it because it's extreme. I mean, I can actually see a small family, you know, driving in that car and really using it almost as a daily driver rather than just, you know, this kind of high-powered, ultra-high-end machine that can go 400 or 500 kilometers an hour. And that's, you know, finding that kind of way in between, that's very interesting. That it's obviously limited to about 300 cars. If you put into perspective how many cars Koenigsegg usually builds, that's actually quite a lot. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure this is going to be more like their mass volume car, to put it that way. So I would actually expect it to be a little bit on the lower end in terms of pricing, not as high as maybe the Regera or the Jesko. But still, of course, I mean, you can see the push here. Koenigsegg received quite a bit of money from China via NEFs and, you know, an investment in that kind of direction. It looks like they're really putting up production numbers now. So I'm very interested to see how they're going to fare on in the future against Bugatti, you know, against these kind of high-level, ultra-high-level luxury car companies. And what I like about it is they keep themselves fresh. They're not trying to pretend to be anything in that sense. Also with the interior, you know, it's very, the only thing I don't personally like about the interior is the two on the left and the right side, the screens. I think they could have been done a little bit better in terms of the rear window, the mirrors, but that's a detail. Apart from that, it's been very clean. It's been rather simple. It's still a driver's machine. It's bold in terms of the colors that they have chosen. You know, it's like the contrast between dark and light. I very much enjoy. And for me, I mean, you know, the doors make it, you know, it's obviously the Koenigsegg doors, but that they've managed and kept them on a car like this is fantastic. And it gives this car a little bit more depth.
Oh, absolutely.
And more fun. The only thing I like to say, of course, is the wing on the rear is something that I can appreciate. I can understand that a little bit more subtle would have been more to my taste. But the overall car is, like I said, it's not this kind of in your face, you know, terrible. Oh, look, I have a supercar and I'm rich kind of guy. This has become much more subtle. It's a much more presentable car as well, and it goes much more in a classic kind of direction, which I like. It's still powerful, doesn't lose any of the feeling of mightiness to it, but it's not in your face crazy. And this is a nice feat that the guys have achieved over there.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like I said, it's more elegant than, you know, some of these other vehicles that are out there, and certainly the power and all of that, the performance is kind of in tune with what Koenigsegg's done in the past, but it has that extra bit of finesse. You know, I mean, you know, Christian Koenigsegg clearly has a good eye for design. He's certainly very detail oriented. Having Sasha in there in the mix to make sure that these details come away and come through resolved. I mean, there's so many interesting elements and details. You know, just around the engine bay, you know, the carbon, the way everything works together. I mean, the way the shut lines are, everything is really very well done. But I think, yeah, again, you know, I don't want to like not credit Sasha for a brilliant design. I think everything down to the 9-spoke carbon fiber wheels is amazing. But, you know, the package that he had to work on and the fact that, Koenigsegg already had these doors devised and, you know, it didn't perhaps make the job easier. He still had to find a way around, you know, making things cool. But it's amazing to have a package like that to work on to begin with, you know. And it's great to be able. Obviously, he had to work hand in hand with engineers in terms of making that you know, feasible and resolving that and you know, making everything happen as beautifully as he did. But yeah, I mean, you can't just give Sasha and his team credit. There's a lot of work that went into this vehicle, and it shows.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly the point. You know, I think Sasha is the first one to share, you know, that just the, like, the positive vibe that comes out of the media and, like, from the people surrounding him with the people that have worked on this project. So he's obviously the big figure around it. People know him, similar to Etienne, of course, as well. But there's a big team behind it. And I think, you know, in the entire setup, that was a great teamwork in that sense. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, let's move on from the lovely Koenigsegg to absolutely, and I have to say this, my absolute favorite production car, probably of... definitely the Geneva show. I would say maybe even the past, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. Because if people know me, they like, they know I like a little bit of this quirkiness behind it. And the Citroën Ami. I loved this car last year when we saw it. And this is now a final production version. And my God, okay, so people can say a lot of bad things about this, but how cool is this little thing, you know, and really a thought process going into, you know, the future of mobility and, like, how to get from A to B in a very, you know, big city such as Paris, such as London. I love that they pushed this all the way through into production. I love to see it when it comes out, hopefully very soon. So, yeah, for me, like, you know, I'm going to go into a bit more detail later, but, you know, Eric, what do you think? Toy or like a bad Hot Wheels model or actually really a cool thing?
Well, first of all, I want to ask you a question. Would you buy this? Obviously, there's huge attributes, you know, that you mentioned, you know, strolling around the city and all that. But would you buy it?
I'll tell you one thing. If I would only live in a city, yeah, and obviously, you know, I like to travel and all these things a little bit. But if I would live in a city and I need a small car just to get me from A to B to do my shopping, I would either get something like this or a Smart.
Mm.
So, yes, it is. It would definitely be certainly for that kind of background on my list. Yes.
Okay. So fortunately, I think you're not going to really have to contend with that question at all, because I think it's a subscription service only. But I agree with you. I think it's brilliant from, you know, a kind of very relevant perspective, because everyone's talking about how do you get around, you know, in cities. You can't afford electric cars. They're expensive. You can't charge them. They are now offering a super compact, symmetrical vehicle that's really very pleasant. And it's really great to see Citroën putting this into production for a very nominal, you know, it's like £17 per month on a subscription base, you know, here in the UK, which is amazing. It's like outstanding for this subscription. But from a design perspective, you know, when I saw the Citroën Ami concept last year, I thought that was amazing. I know it'd been kicking around for a while, basically through, you know, even from the Malval days, where, you know, now Alexandre is over in Mercedes-Benz and has been for almost, what, a year and a half, 2 years almost. But this concept already existed before he left. So now the fact that they chose to roll it out and show it in Geneva last year is great. But I feel that, you know, it's a lot of the premium elements of the concept that made it massively appealing have been watered down in my opinion, you know, and you know, let's not forget, I mean, lamps are expensive, right? So it's understandable, right? You can't offer an electric vehicle for £17 a month, you know, by having all of those supreme details. But as a package, as an overall kind of problem-solving alternative in terms of, you know, electric vehicles, it still retains a lot of the basic qualities of the concept, right? The symmetry, it's clever, really, you know, in terms of, like, getting sharing the doors and, you know, putting them one on the other and sharing componentry and, you know, having the front end kind of look like the back. I mean, you're saving a lot in terms of tooling, in terms of money, in terms of getting this done and built. But then at the same time, you still have a lot of personalization options available. So if you choose to own this vehicle, which I guess you might be able to, I don't know. I mean, the big thing that was appealing to me was the subscription service. Because you can easily see this thing run around like you can the electric scooter rentals in Munich, right? Yeah. It's just, you know, you pay, you subscribe, you use it, you park it, you're done. And then they'll be kind of just showing up in random places in the city and you can use it and get around. And I think from that perspective, it makes a whole lot of sense. But yeah, if you want to purchase it, apparently you can actually purchase it and it's going to be like really cheap. And also it just basically doubles as a scooter. So if you're like a kid, you know, at 14, you can ride a scooter in France. And you can also get a voiture sans permis, they call them, which is basically a car without a license. And that's exactly what this is. So it can't go very fast. But hey, you can, you know, get into it and drive with your friends to wherever it is destination you need to go. So I think in terms of creating something that, you know, is very relevant, this certainly takes the cake. And I wish that I could have been there to kind of pour over some of the details in person. But yeah, I mean, I do wish that they had retained some of those elements, those really cool details, you know, perhaps even the larger wheels. But all of that is cost driven. And I understand if you're offering a vehicle for like 6,000 euros, that it's going to be, you know, it's going to have to take a hit in one way or the other, you know, and obviously certain details had to go away in order for this to become reality.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there is a very important factor onto this. If you compare this to product design, for example, the packaging this comes with it, you know, the usage of materials, of course, and, you know, being really on this kind of very cheap level or entry level market to really get it, you know, adapted into the social system of a city. I just think it's brilliant. You know, you can obviously say it's ugly as hell. Like, you know, you don't like that the front looks exactly like the rear and all these things. I completely understand that. But I think what we've been missing a lot in transportation design is actually very smart design. You know, using what has been given to you and the budget that you want to achieve in the smartest way possible. And something like this, you know, combining business with creativity, with manufacturing and production to a level where you can say, wow, this is unique. It's still, you know, going to, like, the people will recognize it as a Citroën, is where I'm saying, like, you know, this is highly impressive. It's not like the Koenigsegg where you say, like, whoa, it's, you know, it's absolutely beautiful. Like, you know, or like, I don't know, like you can call it an Aston Martin or like a Polestar or something like that. This is, you know, this is the combination of probably more towards industrial design and traditional car design, because the pricing is so aggressive and so tight on this one. But that makes it for me even more, you know, even more impressive that they have managed to do something like that. So, I give a lot of kudos to the people at Citroën, and, you know, the forefront absolutely. At the moment is obviously Pierre Leclerc, and not just for doing that, but for also having the balls to run with it and bring it out into the market. Because if you look into what Mercedes is doing at the moment with Smart, obviously going fully electrified, you know, having a cooperation with Geely based on the Smart as well, is where you think just like, okay, so are you really behind this? Or, like, you know, do you think it's better for different markets? This is for Europe, you know, this is going to come out all over Europe pretty much. And it could also be, you know, working in China. It could also be working in Japan. So I'm very pleased with this. I like the quirkiness personally, but just, you know, also having the designers, the balls to go for something like this. And as you mentioned, like, lights are expensive and all these things, but, you know, it's, I have the highest respect for it. And for me, the absolute coolest thing is the doors, because they open in, you know, towards a different kind of direction. And it looks really cool from the top level when they open that. So they have this really cool shot on there. But yeah, so well done, well done to the Citroën design team on the AMI.
No, but, I definitely agree. I mean, I think, you know, from different levels in personalization as well, if you look, the design's been really well involved, and we've seen little concepts like this unveiled before, but just to kind of, you know, sum it up, I think this is definitely in the vein of the 2CV for the modern day, right? A basic vehicle that can do a lot in a very small package and a very cheap package as well. I think it's very, very relevant. And so, yeah, definitely I applaud Citroën for putting this out, but definitely far more product oriented than anything else on this list.
Yep. Cool. All right. So let's actually stay with the Frenchies for now quickly. very, very quickly. Let's talk about the DS9. Oh. And I know that you had a little bit of a Twitter conversation about this car when they presented that as well. I think you had some comments. I think it was about like the front as well, like, you know, with the chrome and stuff. But so this is pretty much a 508?
Yes.
Peugeot, but just for the DS platform and a little bit longer. So the wheelbase is a little bit longer because it's aimed for the... For the Chinese market, right? Is that what I get from it? Or
yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, as far as I know, you know, Chinese buyers are still out there wanting to purchase sedans, and you know, the flagship Citroën is this DS, you know, and I don't know. I mean, there's certainly some cool detailing within this vehicle, but ultimately, I don't know. I'm not impressed. I don't know. I mean, I wish that it was something a bit wilder, a bit more, you know, DS inspired rather than just kind of a repeater on the D pillar. Like, I'm underwhelmed, unfortunately, with this vehicle. And I know the packaging constraints. I know like everything that they had to deal with in terms of coming out and creating something based on this already existing platform, but I just think there's nothing really that communicates DS to me, you know, about this. You know, it doesn't pay homage to its 1955 predecessor. It doesn't, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think they are lacking with this brand, which is a real shame because I think from and we've talked about this in the past, you know, with other like SUVs and things that they've brought out. I think there is scope to create something really different. And maybe, you know, they don't want to. They don't want to alienate some potential buyers in China because ultimately that's the whole reason this brand was created, right? Is to leverage the Parisian aspect of this bag like Louis Vuitton, but of this vehicle company, rather. But at the same time, I think the typology is really what dissuades me the most about this vehicle.
I think it's very difficult. I think, you know, the DS... sales numbers in general are, they don't really allow them to become more adventurous in the design. It's quite conservative. I do understand the constraints of the platform and everything. But I also think that some of the details, like for example, this chrome thing on the hood, I don't even know, like, you know, how I should present, you know, like describe
it. Just a decorative element, basically.
Why is it there? Why is it there? You know, is why would you want to put that on there? I mean, you know, we've seen that with Hongxi's, they have it traditionally, you know, on the front as well. And obviously you can take that from there, but I just don't see why the DS has that. Maybe, you know, I'm not as, you know, as well informed about some past or the history of DS that this might've been something in the past. And if it is, then I do apologize.
No, it has zero to do with the past. This has to do with Chinese market. That's it.
Yep.
You know, make it flashy and they'll like it. You know, it's different. Yep. So we've never seen it before. So let's do it. That's really the only reason. There's nothing DS about this.
Yep. But you know, what I think is obviously DS is its own design team and Citroën and Peugeot is its own design team.
Is it though?
Yeah. They're all separate, I think.
Really? Completely, entirely separate? Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I think so. But wow. For me, is when I look at it, this is the fundamental thing. It's not a bad car, but it doesn't stand out in today's culture. So, you know, if you see it on the streets, why would you buy this instead of a Mercedes, you know, E-Class or an S-Class or something like that? You know, what does it make it stand out as a whole from a 7 Series or an A8 or an A7 or something like that? It's just not, from that perspective, pushing enough to have the standout culture. And I could see that this is going to be difficult in China, you know, because the Chinese have so much option there as well. Is the question of, like, why would they want to buy this instead of a Mercedes or instead of the Audi? That's just a question from a design perspective I can't answer. The funny thing is, because we can only view this on pictures, it looks much better in a darker color than in a lighter color. Yeah. And the interior, I don't know. It's, again, it's like, it's this kind of thing, like, well made, everything is okay, but it doesn't necessarily stand out. Like, for example, the 208 stood out when we saw it last year in Geneva, you know? Mm. And I think if you want to get that from a creative perspective, these standout features are something of very much importance. And of course, maybe from pictures, we just don't see that right away, or we can't really see that. But it doesn't really give me the confidence that, you know, enough people will buy a DS9 instead of an S-Class or something like that.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to be within the details. And, you know, if you're a keyboard warrior checking stuff out on a laptop, you can't really see the intricacies of those details. Proportionally, of course, you know, like you say, it's based on this 508 platform, so a bit elongated. I think the only real way that they can get into the Chinese market with any success is and compete against the likes of, you know, some of the European premium car manufacturers, German premium car manufacturers that we know is in price. That's it, you know, that will give them an edge and an advantage. Because otherwise, yeah, I mean, if it's the same amount of money, why would you get this over an E-Class or an S or whatever? I don't even know the size of this thing. It's almost 5 meters, actually. So yeah, it's about S-Class in size. Maybe not quite, actually, but a bit shorter. But anyway, I think that's enough time spent discussing this, if I'm honest. It's a shame, because when the DS brand came out, I thought they were going to be doing something really cool. They have an incredible heritage. They could do with some really strong innovation. And then at the same time, they're not really coming out with anything particularly innovative at all. But the interior, you know, it's far more geometric and architectural than anything else. I do kind of appreciate that kind of, you know, modern element to their interiors and their design. But yeah, overall, I just, you know, I know the name of the game in the auto industry. You have to share platforms and cut corners in order to make the bottom line, make it worthwhile. But it's a shame that it isn't more adventurous and more unique as Citroën's DS was, you know, in terms of innovation.
Speaking of more adventurous and innovative, I leave that up to the people. Let's talk a little bit about the Bentley Mulliner Bacalar, which is following the trend of having spider cars and convertibles, and it's a new Bentley car. So, you know, that's quite a bit of a surprise on, like, what they have come out with, and in my opinion, this thing has some really, really cool things and some really bad things as well. So, like, you know, if you would have a balance, the balance would almost be impossible to find, because the stuff that I like, I really like, and the stuff I don't like, I was just like, what is going on there? So I don't know. Like, what do you think about Bentley's latest creation and the presentation?
Well, first of all, when this was teased quite a long way ahead of the show, and I fully expected to see an SUV, like, you know, another kind of trim level for the Bentayga. I didn't expect a new vehicle. I totally expected like an insane kind of decked out Bentayga. But anyway, that was me. I guess, I don't know. I'm so used to seeing SUVs now, and SUVs are so much part of the of the landscape these days that I just totally imagine that would be it. I did not imagine a two-seat, you know, Barchetta from Bentley. Not at all. But, you know, it's like the Gemera that we discussed earlier, this is very much a, you know, limited edition, you know, 1.5 million pound, you know, vehicle for super rich billionaires, not to mention the fact that it's powered by a V12 engine. So, yeah. I mean, you know, Jesus Christ, like, I mean, come on. This is another one where you have to be like extremely privileged, you know, to own one of these. There's only 12 cars that are going to be built. And it's really just, to me, what struck me when I saw it was the fact that they are bringing Mulliner back, right? Mulliner being this historic nameplate coach builder that they used to use, and then that they eventually bought, if I'm not mistaken, you know, very much it's in line with what we're seeing happening in the super high-end luxury elements of the business right now. You know, people are either going to be buying Citroën Amis because they need to get around, or renting them to a subscription, or if they've got way too much money, they want to go out and buy something like this, apparently, because that's what these super high-end luxury manufacturers, Bugatti, Bentley, I mean, you know, you name it, are going for. Aston Martin as well. So, I mean, everybody is getting into this game. So the V12 two-passenger Barchetta is a bit of a disconnect with what's happening in reality. You know, I don't know. I mean, even if I had the money, which is presumably about 100, you know, 1.5 million, I think it is, I don't know if I'd get that. I mean, shit, I'd buy a house, you know. But anyway, I think from a design perspective, it's a bit more vulgar, I think, than what we're used to seeing Bentley as. And, you know, Bentayga notwithstanding. I mean, you know, there's certain things that you can do with that car and the Rolls Royce as well, SUV, where, you know, your hip hop artists are going to have a field day, and they've shown some of these things that Mansory has created off the basis of these vehicles, which is wow. But anyway, yeah. I think it's based on this 100EX concept that was shown over the summer sometime, whenever it was. And so the EXP 100 GT, which is a very long, you know, vehicle, which had some very interesting details, but I don't really see how Bentley can, I don't know. I mean, it's a complete change in terms of their design language from what it is that they were creating in terms of soft, flowing, seamless, very elegant, I would say, design. And this is much more, and you mentioned it before, in your face than something else, like, you know, than anything that they've done pretty much in the past, in my opinion. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a huge fan. Obviously there is a market for these cars right now, and people are going to be looking to definitely make some money off of having something like this in the lineup. And if you can charge that much for a car, hey, why not, right? But I don't see it being very relevant.
What I do like about it, I mean, this is why I said this in the beginning, is if you really look at just the side view itself and just ignore a little bit the front, I find it actually very nice. You know, it's quite clean. It doesn't play with too many lines. You know, it's not too busy. I think it's actually a very elegant kind of style. And I do have to say, I do very much enjoy the rear, because the rear is cleaned up. It's not too heavy. You know, it doesn't come with 100 million diffusers anymore. It's, you know, it's rather clean, but it doesn't fit the overall picture with the front. The front is this kind of in your face, you know, look at how big our grill is, and look how big, you know, the air intakes is and everything. It's almost like you have a completely different car from the front, you know, the side and the rear. And That's for me the biggest problem about it, because either make it vulgar, which is the front, you know, or you make it much more eloquent, eloquent from the rear. But it almost looks like, you know, like a party in the, you know, you have party in the front and business in the back, in that sense.
And so this is the mullet of hypercars.
It's the mullet of way too expensive luxury cars. And that's actually really sad, because, like, you know, I saw the rear three-quarter view at first and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like that. And then you got, like, to go towards the front and just like, come on, guys, what happened there? Who came towards that kind of idea?
Yeah.
Also with the air intake on the hood, you know, it looks like, oh, we go Fast and Furious, or we go like Need for Speed in the front. And then, you know, oh, and by the way, but I forgot I had to go to the opera. Oh, so can we make the rear is the opera? Like, just doesn't work, unfortunately, in that sense, which is really a shame, because I think if they've either would have done an aggressive car, that could have been really cool. Or if they would have done the car as a fully, you know, eloquent and really high level, you know, styled car in a very positive manner, almost like, you know, what an Aston used to be, then that would have been great. So in that kind of circumstance, as it is at the moment, it's just a weird mix of, you know, ideas that probably were put together. And unfortunately, that just doesn't work out.
It's interesting that you say weird mix, because that's exactly what I get. I mean, you mentioned the rear three-quarter before. Now, I think my biggest issue perhaps with the rear three-quarter is this, you know, line, this accentuation that they've put on the rear haunch. I don't think that's necessary at all. I think if they'd done away with that and made it more of a voluptuous, flowing, more human-like gesture, I think it would be, it would communicate better with me. I don't know why it's there. Maybe they wanted to show that, you know, hey, we're hard-edged and we can do this. And just because you can doesn't mean you should. I think this is a classic example of, you know, take away lines. And I think if De Silva had still been in command over there at the VW group, he probably would have come in and said, what the hell are you guys doing with that shoulder? You know, why is there this, why are you accentuating the haunch with this kind of useless addendum of a line? That to me is probably the most jarring element of that vehicle is that rear haunch. And of course you have to pronounce the rear haunch because it's a rear drive V12 powered, you know, supercar. But I don't think that it does it any favors. I think that it makes it way too busy and fussy, and certainly in that regard, not necessary.
Another thing that's, in my opinion, very much unnecessary to move on to the next car is the Aston Martin V12 Speedster. And I put this out there yet again. I absolutely love the brand of Aston Martin. But this thing is, I don't know what you think about this, because we haven't really spoken up front, but this is a joke for me. You know, it's just, why is it there? I don't know. I know they have money problems. Do they need that? Look, it's an absolute joke, this thing. If I look into the front, you know, like, throw that thing away. Like, what are you doing? It's way too busy with everything that's happening. The side is going away from a traditional, very simplistic Aston Martin style to a fully overloaded way of, you know, how the side interacts. The rear is probably one of the better rears that they've done in the recent years, but this seems a little bit just like a toy car, or somebody came up, it's like, oh, you know, Ferrari did the SP2, and it seems like these speedster cars without the windscreen are the cool thing at the moment, because McLaren is doing one as well. This is a massive fail. And, you know, I know they're only going to build, what, like 88 of them at a price of about £750,000 starting. I would probably question that they will sell all of them.
I don't doubt they will sell them. Yes. I mean, there's only 88 going to be built. But, you know, I, like you, and I mentioned this earlier in the podcast as well, that this is going to be a theme. I mean, we spoke about it. These ultra high-end kind of, you know, bespoke one-offs, not one-offs, but limited edition, shall we say, vehicles is very much, it's very much du jour. It's been something that we've seen just grow and grow and grow over the last few years. And just, and this is, I guess, the latest example, the latest entry in that growing list of one-off kind of collector edition, if you will, want to call it that, in a few years' time, vehicles. So again, you know, a massive disconnect with, you know, on one hand, you got like climate change, Greta, and then on the other end, you got Aston Martin V12 Spider. Like, I mean, granted, at seven and change, 765, whatever, it's pretty much half the price of the Bentley, but it's still a V12 powered two passenger. Like, what is this? You know, and I've never been a big fan of cars without a windscreen. Like, at the end of the day, if you want to have no windscreen, just get on a bike, save a shitload of money. You still need to wear a helmet. You know what I mean? And you still need a helmet to drive around legally in one of these things, I think. So it's pointless. It's completely pointless. And it's a shame because, yeah, Aston Martin not in the best financial condition right now, not doing particularly well. But hey, if you can get 765 out of the some punter for one of these 88 examples of your V12 Spider, okay then. It's another, you know, millionaire's toy, and I don't really see the point.
Yeah, so, you know, let's not go into any kind of more detail with that. I think the people see that this is certainly, if we would have seen that in the flesh, I think we would have looked at it for like 5 minutes and then moved on. You know, it's just that thing for me. Obviously, there's a lot of emotional, attachment for me to that brand because I like it a lot. And it's,
yes,
but it's just has nothing to do with the past anymore. You know, this, I can understand this as well. But I would challenge, and this is the right thing to do. I've been talking, you know, to a bunch of dealers about this as well, and they're challenging that as well. So I don't know if, you know, the current setup that they have. I mean, you know, Lawrence Stroll coming in, being the new investor and CEO or whatever, or president or whatever his official role will be there. You know, one can hope that he will clean up a little bit. And obviously, they've tried to do that already due to the financial situation. But maybe this cleanup can go a little bit further, and maybe we will get back to more what the Fisker V8 used to be, and the Ian Cullum DZ7, those kind of cars, you know, which are highly regarded in today's culture, of course. But yeah, if we look into the new Vantage, if we look into even, you know, the DBS Superleggera, they're nowhere close in terms of respect for that. And maybe it's time to change something.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Stroll coming in, of course, you know, going for mid-engine directions and stuff like that. But, you know, you need to have that one car that's that really sells, which used to be the Vantage, and it's not the Vantage anymore. So you need to probably look a little bit back, and why is it that people bought these Astons, and especially, like, you know, Vantages? I mean, you know, they sold over 10,000 Vantages of the Fisker generation. That for a company like Aston Martin is a massive amount of cars. And at the moment, they're not anywhere close to that. And maybe the DBX will help him with that one. I don't think it will be. But, you know, I think, you know, further things need to change. And maybe that will have a certain kind of, you know, and hopefully it will, that, you know, influence on the design department as well.
Yeah. I think ultimately Aston's really shot itself in the foot by discontinuing all EV involvement. I think they really need to bring that back in, you know, really fast. Because, you know, let's face it, you know, internal combustion engines are going away really quickly, just in light of like current regulations and everything that is surrounding, the world right now is huge. If they can show themselves as being innovative from that perspective, continue to show kind of, you know, interesting designs, perhaps, you know, maybe not in the direction that they're going at the moment, but, you know, that they have in their repertoire. I mean, because let's face it, the Bentley, for example, you know, when that 100 EXP came out, that was purely electric. And they, yeah, you know, Bentley and Rolls-Royce have in the past shown off pure electric vehicles, granted at the concept stage, but still, they are showing that they're interested and that they could potentially be going in that direction. Now with BMW and Volkswagen, you know, Rolls-Royce, Bentley, respectively, as parent companies, there's no doubt that there will be some sort of electrification for these awesome, like, you know, luxury, super luxury manufacturers. Aston Martin's kind of off on the side being like, hey, yeah, we're going to be doing these V12s. If we can squeeze out a couple of guys to buy 88 examples of this V12, it's like, come on, guys, get with the times, man. Like, you know, come out and do something not only interesting from a design perspective. Obviously, you want to cater to the car enthusiast, but look at what Lotus has done. You know, they came out with the Evija. Evija's pure electric, you know, super limited edition as well, no doubt, £1 million and change, no doubt. But, you know, hey, it's electric, right? And so, and it's more future looking generally in all around, you know, from a basic aesthetic perspective to, but anyway, I think Aston is unfortunately trailing behind. And I can only hope that this added investment in the new, you know, buyer is going to be doing something interesting for them because they need it.
All right. They certainly do. Let's talk about something new, which we didn't really expect. This company just showed up a few months ago, which is the Zinger 21Z. And it's 21Z. Zinger, not in... Yes. Not in the sense of, like, you know, the Zinger Porsche guys. No. This is Zinger with a Z... with the C and the Z,
yes,
in the beginning, and it's yet another hypercar. So, you know, we're not getting rid of them. yet another hypercar coming out of America this time, coming with a background of 3D printing, which I find very interesting, but not a very pretty car, I have to say. From
no,
my perspective.
I would agree. You know, I know a couple of guys that were involved in this thing, but you know, this is from, you know, one of the many companies that is coming out of California right now. I don't think it's a very good looking car. It's obviously going to be a very limited edition vehicle, but there are some strong people behind this, and as you mentioned, the propulsion system, or rather the manufacturing system, the 3D manufacturing is really going to save a lot of time and money. And hopefully that's going to be able to trickle down into for other OEMs as well. And not just in terms of, you know, it's cost efficient and it's time effective and all of that. No. When you think about what this has the potential to do for countries rather, that have yet to enter into the manufacturing of motor vehicles or whatever mobility systems, this is going to be really quite cool. So from that perspective, you know, yeah, I think it's great. You know, 3D printed components as well can be very lightweight. They can be manufactured in very short amount of time, and they cost zero money. And you know, you can also use a lot of much more sustainable materials in terms of construction as well, if you're able to do that. So yeah, I think it's great. You know, Divergent is the parent company, and they've done some stuff in that in terms of production in the past. But yeah, it's certainly not like, I don't think it's that pleasing, shall we say, aesthetically. I do like the package. You know, it's kind of like a Twizy on steroids, right? I think it's, you know, because it's like this two-passenger tandem, like the doors are absolutely massive. Yeah, I think it's another kind of one-off thing that is going to be great for, you know, people, performance car enthusiasts, certainly. You know, to get behind the wheel of. I mean, I'd love to go for a drive of this, and yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting car from that perspective.
This seems very much like a technology carrier.
Yes.
You know, it's to kind of show what the company such as Divergent, when it comes to 3D printing and you know, with all the materials that they can 3D print nowadays, is capable of doing. And with that happening is oftentimes that, you know, they think they can do something, and obviously with the restraints of certain sizes that they can achieve and and shapes, because tooling just works a little bit differently. They're obviously, you know, in my personal opinion, a little bit in a corner of what they can achieve with the design. And that is obviously a restriction a designer has to work with. And I think this is not an easy one to work with. But, you know, it's still something for me personally is where I say, like, the only color for me that works is black. The blue color on the pictures, the white color on the pictures is just not working. It seems a little bit like a robo race car, but you kind of had to put, you know, a capsule in the middle so that somebody is driving it. If you compare it with the robo race, it looks much better. And it doesn't really look fresh. It looks like, you know, you take some elements from all these different cars that are already out there that are interesting in general. Like, you know, if you look into the interior, it looks a little bit like a McLaren Speedtail, for example. Obviously comes with the layout of the seats as well. It's only a two-seater, but they're right behind. There's nothing new in here. So I don't know, you know, where this can go in the long term. I think, you know, they will do a few cars. I don't think that we're going to see Divergent or, like, you know, Zinger again in the future with more cars, unless they're really going to start to do like a Citroën Ami style. I mean, that would have been even better. Obviously, you don't get that much intention with it as if you would with a supercar. But, you know, based on supercars, I mean, why would you want to get something like this if you can get a Chiron or a Koenigsegg?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting. There's two things that you mentioned there that are very interesting. One is that it looks dated. And the thing is, if you look back into Divergent's history, they created a vehicle called the Blade. And that was shown back in, you know, it was a pure concept, maybe even just a static model. I don't even know if it ran, but it was very much what the C21 or 21C is. You know, it was made of, you know, nodes and carbon fiber tubes for a chassis. It was a tandem, you know. So, and this is a car that was launched back in 2015. So we're talking 5 years back. So, yeah, I mean, they've done a few minor things and changes to that vehicle in terms of getting it ready for production and building. I don't know how many they're going to build, but it's going to be, you know, a one-off type thing as well. Their marketing is really, really very good, though. I mean, I got to say, you know, for a company this small, and they decided to move ahead and do all of these things over in Geneva. They're, you know, from a marketing perspective, the way that they're launching this vehicle is really, really well done. I know the girl behind it, you know, from way back, who's done their marketing for this. But Kevin Zinger as well is very well in tune with what's happening in the automotive industry as well. I mean, this is a guy that back in the day did a company called Coda Automotive, which unfortunately is no longer around. He probably lost some money in that. But Coda was building electric vehicles. They weren't particularly special, but this is a vehicle manufacturer that started life back in 2009 in Los Angeles, purely on the building of electric vehicles. So, you know, we're talking over a decade's worth of experience in this department, automotive batteries, things like that. So, you know, Kevin Zinger is definitely a guy to watch. He knows what he's doing. But, you know, this, and again, I'm not sure how what the plan is with the Zinger 21C. But it is certainly a hypercar, it's interesting from a driver's perspective, a lightweight, you know, construction and 3D certainly printing construction methodology perspective. But yeah, I don't really know what to make of the company long term, right? Because it's still powered by a V8 engine.
Yeah, I think, you know, it might very well be the case that, you know, they use it as a showcase.
Yeah,
it's just about showing what they can do with 3D printing on all different kind of size levels. So, yeah, I mean, you know, let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, one final thing on this, though, is that if you compare, again, we don't talk about engines all that much, and I'm not all that much into performance figures, but if you talk about what this car can achieve You know, with a hybrid setup, we're talking 1,250 horsepower, which is about 500 short of what the Gemera can accomplish. And that doesn't have a V8 engine that this one does. Mm. So, you know, clearly there's a hell of a lot more technology, revolutionary technology in the Koenigsegg than in this Zinger. But you're absolutely right. I'm sure it's a technology showpiece in terms of the manufacturing process.
Yeah. All right, we're going to slowly finish up. So we have two more cars to go. And let's actually do it with the Genesis first.
Oh, right. Okay.
We're going to talk about the Genesis G80. And then we're going to finish it up with your beloved little car out of Italy. Genesis G80. I would have to say some minor details that I really don't like about this. We'll talk about this later. But we've already said that the GV80, which was the SUV, so this is where the naming is getting a little bit complicated, but I hope we're going to get it right. The GV80 was actually a very positive surprise for us already. We believe there was some very strong influence from the Bentley side on this one. And on this one, I would have to say when I see the when I see the side view, it has quite a bit of influence from an Audi A7 of the De Silva days. So we can clearly see this kind of direction coming from the Volkswagen side. But I have to say, this looks actually really good. The rear looks very much like the Genesis Essentia that we saw and talked about earlier quickly when Sasha came in. I still really enjoy the lighting that they're doing with it. I think they're very consequent, very cool, very modern with doing something like that. And that was a very, very pleasant surprise that came out. A couple of details that I don't like, but we talk about them a little bit later. But very impressive, very impressive.
I definitely agree. You know, somebody contacted me yesterday and said, hey, what do you think? And I mean, look, I think it's absolutely incredible. Looking at that car in those kind of moody pictures, I mean, there's only five images that were, you know, exhibited. I don't even know if this was actually planned to be in Geneva, if they were just like, hey, why not?
No, they were. They were supposed to show the car in Geneva.
Okay, well, that's interesting because, you know, the fact that this is really an American, Genesis is an American brand, right? Perhaps, you know, they have aspirations of entering in the European market, but the European market is hard. And very difficult, especially for a D-class luxury saloon. But I think if I'm looking at this car, yes, it very much follows on with the GV80, the SUV that we saw, which I was kind of, you know, there were some cool details and things, but ultimately I'm just not a big fan of SUVs. It's not only because I'm an automotive enthusiast, which I am, I love to drive, but I also just find them to be a bit wasteful. But again, you know, some people may have and do have a different opinion than I do because clearly that is the top selling vehicle. Now, this across a range of different continents. This G80, however, is something that's way more my speed because if this thing drives as good as it looks, this is going to be an absolutely amazing vehicle. Now, what I love about this car, especially from an exterior design perspective, is just how incredibly sensual it is. I mean, there's, to me, yes, there is some A7, certainly in the profile, in the D-pillar, for example, you know, it's like this fastback silhouette.
Yeah.
It's something I think, in my opinion, that, you know, Mercedes could also be doing because it's quite simple. It's very refined. Yeah. It's very elegant. And then, of course, you know, they have these two bar lamps that are just carrying everything around it. So it's very, very harmonious. And, you know, I think it's an incredibly beautiful, you know, design from a surfacing perspective as well. You know, there's only one element, again, which I would kind of levy criticism against, which is there's these two lines again over the rear haunch, which perhaps is, you know, expected to convey athleticism, which is basically what this brand is meant to convey, is this level of dynamic athleticism, but also super luxury. And again, you know, I can't be mad at it because, you know, two lines, right? So that's kind of their main theme is two lines, two lines. So you've got these two lines coming in just over the rear wheel. But otherwise, I mean, if we're looking at this vehicle as a whole, you know, and we're looking at it from an interior perspective as well as an exterior perspective. I mean, this is an incredibly elegant proposition, certainly fitting a very luxury level automobile. I mean, this is like, you know, Hyundai bringing it to Mercedes-Benz, like, you know, hey, we can do this even better than you can type thing.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, damn it, like the interior is phenomenal.
Let's stay on the exterior.
Exterior is also phenomenal.
I agree on everything you said, but I have to say one thing that really lets the whole thing down are the wheels.
Mm.
The wheels look like aftermarket 1999, 2000, put them on the Honda S2000 to make it look cool.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I see what you're saying though. I get
you
what
know,
you're saying.
It's like the whole thing. You see the whole thing and it looks like the wheels just look cheap compared to everything else. You know, that's really on the exterior. The only thing that I can say is like it holds it back, because it just doesn't have that kind of elegance as the rest of the exterior has. But that, of course, can be changed, you know. So we're not wheel haters here. It's just something that in the composition of a picture doesn't necessarily look great. I agree on the interior. The interior is great, apart from one thing, again, and I'll stick to wheels. The steering wheel is something weird. The middle console is nice. I like the screen. It has a good size. It's not too small, not too big. But the steering wheel just looks weird. It just looks a little bit out of date.
I agree with you. Yes, it is a bit dated. It is. It doesn't really go with the rest of it because it's actually quite modern and contemporary. I don't know why they chose to do particularly that kind of, you know, the color. You know, if you look at it from this perspective, like the images that they've shown in this specific model that they've chosen to show, you know, it is consistent, I suppose, in terms of the door panels and, you know, the wood color ways are very, but then, you know, you've got, I guess the reason why it is the way it is because they had to keep that one element of the, within the center of the steering wheel, adaptable in terms of airbags, and you know, you want to put it on a lot of different vehicles, but then the steering wheel is presumably going to be offered in an array of different colors in order to match those those door cards, basically.
Yeah.
And the upper on the and the headliner presumably as well. So yeah, I mean, you know, I can see why they've done it, but again, yeah, it does look a little bit sad, doesn't it? And a little bit dated as well.
But again, I think, you know, as an overall picture, they've done so many good things on this car, at least from what we see from the pictures. You know, wheels outside, okay, they can be changed. Steering wheel, it's something that obviously in the overall picture lets it down a tiny little bit. But if I look, especially in the center console, the armrest, it's just, you know, it just looks good. It just looks all in one place. Everything is, you know, organized. Everything is clean. It's just well done. It's, you know, it's sometimes the best compliment that you can give someone is well done. And this is exactly what it is. You know, it's not over the top. And I think for, you know, if they can keep the pricing on what they've used to do at Genesis, that's going to be a massive competitor to the S-Class. And if you think, and this is the interesting thing, look at this one and then look at the DS9.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, I don't know the size of this, but the last one was massive, and we're talking 20-inch wheels here as well. So this is, you know, even though the vehicle that we're seeing in these pictures are actually, these pictures are renderings, right? They're not real. So that's what kind of leads me to think that this was not going to be in Geneva. But anyway, they've always made a lot of noise in New York. I expect to see this in New York if that show, in fact, goes on. But yeah, I mean, it's way, way better than the last G80 for sure.
Yeah.
Or the G90, I should say, because the G80 is something that we've seen before, or G70, I should say. No. So this is the one that slots between the two. And this is more in line with the G70 that we've seen. And you know, the G90 is something that was just, you know, that was definitely before, you know, the star design team came in, you know, led by Luke and Sang-yup and all the rest. before they came in, it was, you know, the G90 was something that was, just before their time and clearly needed a little bit more reworking. So I'm not a big fan of this, the big one, you know. But this new one is very, very nice indeed.
All right. Last but not least, because we've been here already for an hour and 10.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, wow.
The last one, Fiat 500 La Prima, which is the facelift new version. I'll let you decide on that one, of the Fiat 500, and it's fully electric.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's what makes it new. So they're saying it's all new. The platform itself is probably all new because, as far as I know, this is the first FCA all-electric vehicle that's been created, even though they did have a version of the 500e before in the States. So that is kind of weird. So anyway, I don't really know where to put that. Well, I'll just leave it out there. according to Fiat, this is the first all-electric vehicle, FCA vehicle. So, okay. There's a lot to like in this new one because this is the third generation of the 500, venerable little car that we've seen, you know, for a long time now. I mean, the second, obviously the first one was Dante Giancosa back in the 50s, right? But this is a very new vehicle that has been unveiled. It's the third iteration, essentially, because when the Nueva 500 came out, which was the 2007 edition based on the Fiat Tribuno concept and by Roberto Giolito. This was a revolutionary car for them, which is why it's been in production for damn like 13 years. I remember going on that test drive back in 2007 in Turin on the river. It was a massive affair and it was absolutely brilliant. I got to drive that little car around Turin, which is where it's meant to be driven, but clearly extremely successful vehicle, compact, you know, a lot of different derivatives, Abarth and all the rest. So super cool car, but there was always some elements of that vehicle that, you know, began to show their age. And for, you know, for Fiat, it was certainly a very successful model. So why pull it, right? Fiat's not really one to, they don't have turnover within their lineup all that often. You know, at the if they find a successful model, I mean, look at Lancia, for example. Lancia's still going with some, you know, vehicles that were done like, you know, decades ago. Anyway, this new 500, I think, is very much a modern take on that remake, right? And therefore on the original concept and, package and vehicle from, again, 1957, I think the original came out. But so this new 500, again, the third generation, is super cool. And people love this city car. And so why not? I mean, that's the thing. They kept the main theme of the vehicle, but they brought it up and made it far more contemporary. So again, we've got the same overall silhouette. I'm sure dimensionally it's probably identical, but they've made massive step changes to this vehicle in terms of the overall, like the DRG, the fact that they now have a split kind of lamp, where they have it coming through the headlamp, coming through the hood rather at the top, the grill, the whole front end has been revised. Clearly it's electric. So there are certain things that it needs and that doesn't. And then, the interior, I guess is the biggest thing. I mean, the exterior, there's like minor changes to the tail lamps and things, but the interior is really where they've made a huge, huge stride forward. And I think it's really, really well done because let's face it, this again is an electric vehicle. It's going to be offered purely in electric form as far as my understanding is. So it's going to command a bit of a price premium, and that's what everybody's kind of been on about in the, on the internet in various different forms. is just how expensive it is going to be to get into a 500. It's like 37 and change euros.
Wow.
37,000 euros. Yeah, man. It's not cheap. So they needed to give it a huge boost. And I think they have in terms of the interior in particular. You know, it's a very expensive proposition for a very tiny car, but also I think something that they've done very well at Fiat in terms of bringing it up to contemporary standards and without going the way that Mini did. Because Mini, I think, you know, as much as I like that brand and the people that work within it, I think they lost the plot, man. You know, I think they really did not follow through with the essential idea of what made a Mini, and now it could be anything, right? What makes it a Mini? It doesn't. It's not a Mini anymore. Whereas the 500 is still very much a 500, and so yeah, I really do appreciate this this new car for what it is.
I've always had a problem with the 500 is because I don't fit in it.
You should try fitting in an original.
this is the point. Like, you know, I've had it as a rental car once, and I really had issues of, like, you know, finding a good driving position with it because my legs are just too long. It just didn't really work out.
Maybe that's why they made the 500X.
But look, for me, like, okay, so if I look at this, you know, obviously there's some details that have changed, and obviously the interior was completely refreshed, and I appreciate that. But why is that going to sell for 35 grand if you can get almost the same car, and I say almost the same car, for probably a third of the price? You know, it's not, and it's more like an evolution rather than it's a revolution. And if you compare again, like what it goes up against, like it goes up against the Honda E, for example.
Yes.
And if you ask me from a designer's perspective, yes, the Honda E concept was much better than the production version, but I still like the Honda better than the Fiat 500. And if I have to pay the same amount of price for it with the approximately the same amount of range, why would I spend that? You know, and it's the same with the BMW i3, for example. You know, it's in the same price range. So that's going to be difficult for them. I don't know how many they're gonna build. Like, you know, if they're gonna really make it a mass product, or if it's just about to kind of try out a little bit, like, you know, how they can move into the electric platform. You know, yes, from a technological perspective, there's a big advancement over there, of course. From a pure creative perspective, I don't know. You know, if the whole thing is about almost 15 years old with the original one, I would have hoped for a little bit better and a little bit more, especially thinking about the electrification with it. You know, it's like, use the electrification, it allows you, like, think to work on things differently. Now this looks like what you've mentioned for me as a Mini, and let's use the Mini platform, or like what Smart are doing now as well, is like, you know, put all the electric stuff into Smart. The people are not stupid enough to just fall for that. You know, the people will say, well, yeah, electric, all good, but if I have to pay that much extra, well, then I'd get the petrol version of it, because that's going to be, you know, thrown at me at a tiny little amount of money compared to these 35 grand. So I think they've missed the chance here of really going electric with something really cool, something that I think Honda did well. And as you've mentioned correctly, I think, you know, Mini has missed out. So I'm not as optimistic on it, but, you know, we'll see where it will go.
Yeah, I mean, look, I see your point, and it's valid. You know, you can get a used car for way cheaper, but that's not the point, I think, here. And clearly, you know, developing an electric vehicle is going to cost some money. But what they've done here is they've added a boatload of technology into this as well. So it's not just, you know, it's very much an up-to-date vehicle. I mean, the last one, let's face it, has had very minor revisions until in the last, like, decade plus that it's been for sale.
Yep.
So, you know, the launch edition is going to be 37 and change, but, you know, perhaps it's going to start cheaper, at which point it will come on par with, you know, the Honda E. Now, whether people are going to go for the E over the 500, I don't know. Maybe, you know, people like the 500 and they're going to go for the 500 over the E. I don't know. One thing that I must say, though, about this vehicle is, you know, Fiat is really looking to leverage the sustainability aspect of the electric powertrain, certainly in their marketing and things like that. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they've partnered with Leonardo DiCaprio's environmental organizations. He has several, and they've developed three very unique models, one of which was done by Armani, another one by Bulgari, another one by fashion brand Cartel. And to me, those are like super cool fashion, you know, accessory, trendy, like super awesome. It seems like they're only going to be building three of them, which is kind of a shame, you know, because if you think, why are they only building three when you have this personalization thing that people are just eating into right now? And you can offer this, you know, on three different very unique levels. Because the Armani thing is way different than the Bulgari trim, than the Cartel trim. Mm. You have this ability to really personalize your vehicle, have it be a limited edition of something. Don't just build three. It kind of makes, it doesn't really make much sense from that perspective, you know, because they're going to be donating all the proceeds from those three vehicles to, in a charity auction that they're going to hold. So there's only going to be like, I don't know, you know, these things are going to be worth a hell of a lot of money if there's only three of them, but, or one of each, I should say. But I think they've done a good job. Again, you know, Fiat, perhaps, you know, not wanting to stray too far from the goose is the golden egg, because this is really what the 500 has been for them. I mean, when you look comparatively at what other vehicles, in the Fiat range, the numbers that they do compared to what the 500 does, I mean, it's astounding, you know, how successful that model has been and continues to be over 10 years past its initial introduction. So, I mean, you know, this is very much let's continue to get life out of this, give it a different powertrain and, you know, some new technology and continue producing this really quite successful model.
So, all right.
I like it.
So we're at the end of the production bit.
Yeah. Culminates our production series of this podcast.
So either if you, dear listener, are now continuing to listen to the part two, which will be a separate podcast that we will be uploading, we wish you all the enjoyment that you can find with all the production cars, with all the concept cars coming up in this next episode.
Yes.
If you're starting to take a break and have a listen to us later, Eric, thank you very much once again for doing that with me together.
No pleasure. And, thank you, Martin.
Please let the people know how can they find you on social media.
Well, you can find me on Form Trends. So everything that I do is at Form Trends. Also formtrends.com, where if you want to see pictures of any of these vehicles that we've been discussing, I'm going to be publishing those very shortly. So by the time this goes live, you'll probably have a nice article to accompany it with if you want to see what it is that we've talked about. But also, just basically find me on every single platform that's out there at Form Trends, and also on LinkedIn, Eric Galina. So do get in touch. Thank you very much for joining us. And Martin, you can reach him at it's Concept House on all of the different channels. So Concept House with a K, obviously, KONZEPTHAUS. So a little German spelling in there for you guys, along the various different platforms in which we're present. So, Martin and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Please do let us know, comment, share, do all those nice things. And we'll see you on the next one.
Indeed. Enjoy part two, and thanks for listening.
Cheers, guys.